welcome to the Takes of the Game podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Young. On the other line, we have Eshaun Nath. How's it going, man?
I'm good. I'm ready to talk about basketball.
Nice. So I think we're both in good moods this week because our respective football teams have won. Stanford got a big win over the weekend, but the Bears just won on Monday Night Football, and my Longhorns maybe have finally turned their season around a little bit. Really walloped the USC Trojans in Austin, so feeling good about that.
Yeah, Stanford won, the Bears won, the Longhorns won, and also part of that was USC lost and got embarrassed on national TV, which is always fun for me.
And I will also point out that we were playing each other in fantasy football, and I'm going to call out my dad, who I invited to be the co-manager of our team in the podcast league, and he did not start Patrick Mahomes, and he went to Texas Tech, so feel like that was a little bit hypocritical, and our team name is based on Patrick Mahomes as well. So you won in fantasy this week, so congratulations. But
also, Tom Brady was the quarterback you did start, so I think not a super controversial decision ahead of time to not start Patrick Mahomes over Tom Brady.
Yeah, but you know, I invited him in to be our lineup guy, and he didn't do his job, so you're shunned from fantasy football, Dad, but hopefully you'll rebound next week. But it does hurt. It does hurt to leave a quarterback who throws six touchdowns on the bench. But basketball is right around the corner, so we're getting excited. A couple years ago, League Pass rolled out a format where they you could pick five teams that you could pick for your whole season, that you could watch those five teams on NBA League Pass. But that was an interesting format. They only did it, I think, in the 2014 season. And I've thought every year since then, if I could only watch five teams in the NBA, who would I watch for a full season? So what Eshaun and I are going to crank open tonight, and a couple rules and guidelines that we set for our five teams were the teams can't be our favorite teams. Not sure that would have been too hard of a decision, because I don't know how fun the Spurs and Bulls will be to watch this year. And then Eshaun,
awful to watch.
And then Eshaun, you had some other criteria in making your list. You want to dive into that?
Oh yeah. So also I excluded the Timberwolves because, due to their large number of 2011 Bulls, they sort of count as the Bulls. But yeah, my criteria for picking teams is basically I downweighted teams pretty heavily who are on national TV a lot. Cause you know, if you're playing 35 games on national TV, that's not a lot of league pass value for, you know, you're only getting 45 games of league pass instead of like 78 or something for some of these other teams that are ignored by national TV. And also it's just kind of boring to pick like, you know, Celtics, Rockets, whatever, title contenders that we're all obviously watching because they're title contenders.
Yeah.
And then I really value turnover, like new players, new coaches, something where I feel like I'm learning something new about a team that I didn't already know from having watched them in years past. So that was kind of played a big factor in my rankings. And then I really value guys that I like, that I have like some reason that I can get behind them, often not a basketball reason, something they do off the court, something, just something that gives me an excuse to call them one of my favorite guys in the league. Definitely plays into my criteria. So like an example from a team that I'm not allowed to pick would be Luol Deng and his like years of humanity. He won like a United Nations humanitarian award for all of his work building schools and hospitals and working with refugees in his home country of South Sudan. And so, you know, obviously not everyone can be Luol Deng, literally a globally renowned humanitarian activist. But there's smaller steps in that direction that sometimes make guys my favorite guys that make me want to root for them and watch them on League Pass.
Nice. All right, so let's get into our honorable mentions. I think you had a couple more than me. I only had two honorable mention teams. We disagreed much more on our honorable mentions than we did on our actual list. I think we're developing a shared podcast brain. But my two honorable mention teams were the Memphis Grizzlies, who historically have been one of my least favorite teams to watch. But I actually think this year could be pretty fun with I love a healthy Mike Conley. I do really enjoy watching Marc Gasol. And I think with the rookie Jaren Jackson Jr. and my boy Slow-Mo Kyle Anderson kind of developing more into a motion-centric offense, not so much the grit and grind, slog it out, Tony Allen, Zach Randolph, Grizzlies of the past. I actually think if they stay healthy, they could be a pretty fun team to watch in the West and just, you know, play attractive basketball. You know, pretty much all of their guys are skilled at doing everything. Their big men, Jaren Jackson, Kyle Anderson, and Marc Gasol are all great passers. I think they'll probably be a little bit limited on shooting and obviously still have the Chandler Parsons curse lurking. So that probably takes away watchability rankings. But yeah, I thought that they would actually be
for shooting. It depends a ton whether Jaren Jackson lives up to his college statistics or whether his kind of unorthodox 3-point shooting form, he really kind of tosses a knuckleball up there. There's no spin on his shot.
Yeah.
And, it feels like that kind of form moving out to the NBA line might be a little harder. That being said, he was draining threes in summer league to the extent that that's representative. But if Jackson can shoot, Gasol shoots threes now, so they might be able to make up for elite 3-point shooting with volume of 3-point shooters by having both their starting bigs be guys who are going to take and make threes.
And then my other honorable mention team was the New York Knicks. You know, I am ready to retract my Kevin Knox hate over the summer. He won me over in summer league, and I really love Kristaps Porzingis. Most of my decisions.
When is Porzingis going to play?
I'm not sure, but I honestly have no idea. But
looks like that team is grotesquely unwatchable when Porzingis is out.
But I'm looking forward to when he does return, because David Fizdale team, and I think, you know, maybe it's just buying too much into the narrative hype, but people are discussing the Knicks as a potential free agent destination next summer for guys like Kyrie Irving, maybe your boy Jimmy Butler. So I just kind of want to see, like, can they actually develop a core with Frankie Smokes, Frankie Ntilikina, Kristaps Porzingis, and Kevin Knox, you know, attractive young core under Fizdale's tutelage and his toughness to make some free agents finally want to go to New York. But yeah, that's all I have to say on the Knicks.
I got to say that I was really into your Memphis pick, but the Knicks were like an honorable mention for my bottom five that we're going to get to at the end of this podcast.
Nice.
I like Kevin Knox, but I feel like that team has one player who is really actually definitely a good NBA player in Porzingis, and he's coming off a torn ACL probably halfway through the season from my quick Google. So I feel like the first half of the season, they're going to be completely unwatchable for me. And the second half of the season, they'll have like one guy slowly returning from a serious injury. They'll probably be tanking. They'll probably be looking for another top five pick. And I just don't buy the New York hype, and I don't think any free agents are going to go there.
Sometimes I think
it brings me a lot of joy to shut down New York.
But, you know, tanking could theoretically, teams that have scrappy young players who are kind of learning how to play, but also are tanking towards the end of games, that can sometimes be like high class watchability. So
I disagree.
All right. Give us your honorable mention.
All right. My honorable mentions are basically three teams that were knocked out by the criteria of national TV games. So I think the Celtics, with what Tatum and Brown grew into in last year's playoffs, and Kyrie and Hayward returning, are just going to be fascinating. In addition to the fact that they're going to be incredibly good, and Brad Stevens is so fun to watch organize a team, it's just going to be, from a strategic perspective, like who gets the touches, who gets the ball at the end of close games with, you know, Kyrie, Hayward, but Tatum kind of growing into an alpha dog at the end of last season and now being a year older and better. Or do they just kind of run the same flowing motion offense the whole game? Do they really go hard on switch everything now that they have this endless line of wings with the guys we just mentioned, plus, you know, Marcus Smart, Marcus Morris, Semi Ojeleye? They can basically just run out lineups who can defend all five positions, really, over and over. Horford can defend point guards, too. So the Celtics are going to be fun. They're going to be on national TV too much. They're a title contender. Lakers, we've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast. Either LeBron is going to pull some incredible magic and he and the kids are going to team up and they're going to win a lot, and that'll be fun. or this bizarro roster that they put together with all these guys who don't play defense, like having the ball, and can't shoot. Rondo and Lonzo and Lance, and, well, LeBron, obviously, not the other descriptions don't apply to him, but he does like having the ball. So, and JaVale's on their team, Michael Beasley. So one way or another, the Lakers could be a ton of fun to watch, but also national TV a ton. Then the Rockets, I'm super fascinated to see just how much it kills them to bring Carmelo on board and lose guys in Ariza and Mbabute, who I thought were really, really crucial to their both their offense and their defense, switching everything, small ball fours and even sometimes small ball fives that those guys would serve as, and then the shooting off the ball. Whereas Carmelo, I think, is just the antithesis of the Rockets, like a bunch of ISO mid-range jumpers and no defense. So it'll be really interesting to me to watch that play out. But again, national TV penalty. And then my fourth honorable mention is a team that I actually don't really recommend as a league pass team to others because they're going to lose a lot, and I think they won't be that fun to watch. But I personally will be tuning in as often as possible to watch the Atlanta Hawks and my boy Trae Young on League Pass to see how his likely bumpy adjustment to the NBA progresses and what he's able to do in his rookie season, as well as to see, you know, the progression of John Collins, their promising rookie center from last year, and their other rookie, Kevin Huerter, who's a really terrific shooter at Maryland. You know, a lot of people are talking about, obviously, this is way too much hype, but a lot of people are talking about how Travis Schlenk, the Hawks' new general manager, who previously worked in the Golden State Warriors organization, is trying to build his team around shooting, and Trae and Huerter are kind of his Steph and Clay hopeful backcourt combo of the future, which obviously Steph and Clay are Hall of Famers, and it's unfair to hold any rookie to the standard of Hall of Famers. But in terms of style of play, it is kind of a remarkably similar backcourt.
Yeah, so on that note, I'm in Aspen, Colorado right now on a work trip. And, you know, one of the famous movies from the 90s, Dumb and Dumber, is set in Aspen, Colorado. You know, John Denver's full of shit, famous line about the Rocky Mountains from Dumb and Dumber, featuring Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. I think in the early 2000s, there was a terrible sequel that came out to Dumb and Dumber, Dumb and Dumberer, with two actors that nobody had had ever heard of. I would probably compare the Hawks' impression of the Splash Brothers with Trae Young and Kevin Huerter to their own version of Dumb and Dumberer. And I'm really...
That's such a silly criticism. Obviously, no one thinks that some rookies who were picked whatever, 5th and 19th are actually going to be Hall of Famers.
But I'm just really excited over the next few years to see all of these terrible impressions of the Splash Brothers.
No, but that's such a bad no, because what the Warriors have shown has already been copycatted by every other winning team in the league, which is that you cannot be elite without three-point shooting anymore. Every team that's competitive to make the finals and win the championship the last few years is organized primarily around three-point shooting as their offensive strength. The Rockets and Warriors last year, the Celtics from all their positions last year, the Cavs the last few years, it's basically like LeBron plus 4 3-point shooters for the entire game, even to the point that they went, in my opinion, too far and benched Tristan. But anyway, this is a topic for a different podcast.
Yeah, and we, you know, touched on strategy shifts last time, but I also don't think it's fair to say like the Warriors did not invent shooting. And we touched on that last time.
Didn't invent it, but like a central part of strategy being organized around shooting is definitely a thing that's exploded over the last few years.
I'm not sure how we didn't get into this last week, but also the Spurs were definitely doing what the Warriors were doing before the Warriors won in 2015. And Jackie,
my central point isn't that the Warriors were the ones who invented this. My central point is that you keep making fun of these cheap knockoffs of three-point shooting or whatever, and I'm just saying that, like, that's the only way to get good anymore. Like, you might fail, and your three-point shooters might be bad players, but, like, if you try to organize your team around non-shooters, then you're just definitely not going to succeed versus, like, probably not going to succeed.
I mean, I agree with you. I just think that Trae Young and Kevin Huerter are going to be a really bad impression of Steph and Clay. And I think like that's like it's been noted that that's what Atlanta is trying to do in their front office, is kind of, you know, build that perimeter heavy. And Trae Young is great off the dribble. He's got a quick release. You know, he's similar to Curry in some ways. I know, obviously, and you've outlined his differences before, where Kevin Huerter is much more like Klay Thompson, catch and shoot guy who doesn't need the ball in his hands very much. But I just think both of them are way less efficient, not as good versions of Steph and Klay.
But that's such an uninteresting comment, because literally any drafty in the history of basketball is going to be a worse version of a Hall of Famer. Like, the median projection for the best drafty ever is not Hall of Famer. So like, they're definitely 99% likely to be worse, but like, the upside is there.
All right, I'm adding the Hawks to my, I only had four teams on my least watchable rankings. They're getting into my fifth spot, which we'll go over at the end of the podcast. Let's get into our top five. So despite our heavy disagreement right there, our list is actually remarkably similar, maybe for some different reasons. But let's start off with the one team. We had four out of our five teams on each of our lists we agreed on. You want to go with your team that was not on my list first?
That was the Pacers, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, I think the Pacers were a ton of fun to watch even last year. And frankly, didn't get to watch them enough because I didn't realize how much fun they were until later in the season. But Victor Oladipo just blossomed into a truly dominant superstar. Just incredibly fun blend of athleticism, ball handling, shooting, competitiveness, defense, teamwork. He's like the perfect young player in so many different ways. And also, I really, you know, to the extent that player narratives fit in, I really enjoy the Oladipo story of how his parents were upset with him for playing basketball in high school and throughout his college career, even to the point where they wanted him to quit and get better grades so he could go to medical school. And then even when he became the second pick in the draft, it like didn't really do that much to assuage this family drama. And so like apparently last year's All-Star game was the first time his dad watched him play in person.
Oh, wow.
And so I kind of really have gotten really into watching Victor Oladipo over the last few years. And so that's the primary reason I really like the Pacers. But then I also like a lot what they've done with the fringes of their roster this year. I thought last year the Cavs really exposed that they didn't have any secondary creation, really. Like, they would double Oladipo on the pick and roll far away, and he would get it into someone else's hands. And it was like, you know, up to Thaddeus Young basically to make a play off the dribble, which isn't really his game. So I think adding Tyreek Evans and drafting Aaron Holiday could be potentially really useful on that note. And then I also really like their other point guards, Corey Joseph and Darren Collison, who were on the team last year.
And they have a great defensive backcourt now with Oladipo and Tyreek.
Yeah, absolutely. And Corey Joseph, a premier backup point guard defender off the bench. They have some fun young bigs in Sabonis and Turner that are developing. I think Thaddeus Young's a really underrated player because of his versatility, both on defense and offense. Kind of a little bit of everything in terms of who he can guard and shooting from the perimeter, offensive rebounding, finishing at the bucket, a little bit of post game. And then Doug McDermott and Bojan Bogdanović are their two perimeter shooters. Bogdanović really, really came through huge in that Cavs series, playing like a borderline all-star in the playoffs, at least last year.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like the way they brought Bogdanović's career, it was kind of going nowhere. Like, he was 28 years old at the beginning of last season and wasn't really viewed as like an important NBA player. And now he's like a high-level starter and on a good night, a borderline star. I kind of feel hopeful that they might be able to have a similar-ish, not maybe to the same extent, but rejuvenating effect on Dougie McBuckets' career, who, under the radar a little because they were tanking, really played very well for the Mavericks towards the end of last season. Shot like 43%. I don't have this in front of me, but I think he shot 43% on threes with Dallas last year. And his scoring, yep, 42.6%. And his scoring versatility, really, I think, in this offense with the kind of creation they have from Oladipo, could be really useful in 15-20 minutes off the bench. Plus, I love Dougie, former Bull.
Yeah, and I think that they almost made my like top five. And when you showed me your list, I didn't put them in my honorable mention. But they you know, I'm regretting not doing it now. I'm really excited to watch them this season. And I think they fit sort of multiple criteria when it comes to league pass watchability. That one, they're really young, so you're going to see them get better as the season goes on. Two, they're good, but they're not good enough to where they're not going to like blow a ton of teams out, but they're probably, their point differential is probably going to be, you know, under 5 points a game. So they're probably going to have a lot of really close and exciting games. You know, they played the Spurs the couple times I saw them last year to really close, exciting games that, you know, came down to shots in the last minute. And then they also just have a variety of different lineups. And I think that's what really makes, you know, League Pass really exciting, is when you're not just watching, you know, like a D'Antoni-esque Suns team where it's really only five or six players playing every night. You know, all the guys you mentioned, I mean, they're really shockingly actually 10 deep. And I know this is more about watchability in the season, but I think what's cool about the Pacers is, besides the Celtics and the Raptors, provided that Kawhi comes back fully healthy and engaged, I think I could see the Pacers upsetting, you know, the Sixers in the playoffs. I could see them winning a series over the Sixers, over the Bucks. You know, obviously they're probably better than the Bucks as a team, but the Bucks clearly have, you know, the most talented player.
Yeah, the Pacers have enormous upside. When you have a true superstar, which Oladipo absolutely is, he was borderline top 10 player last season. True superstars surrounded by really good role players and good coaching and Nate McMillan, that's a team that absolutely has upside.
Yeah.
I like that you mentioned their depth. I mean, when you've got a bench five of like Corey Joseph, Aaron Holiday, Doug McDermott, Sabonis, and like Trevor Booker, I guess, that's like a really, those are like five players who are very good NBA players coming off your bench.
Yeah.
All right, we should probably move on.
All right, so my team that was not on your list was the Los Angeles Lakers, which, like you mentioned, we've talked about a ton. We'll talk about them a ton during the season. So, you know, you touched on it earlier. The Lakers are on my list for three reasons. One, I love LeBron. He's my favorite non-Spur of all time. It's probably not a shocking statement, but love watching him play. Actually getting to see the Lakers and Spurs play October 27th. So I will have seen, I think this will be like my 10th or 11th time to see LeBron live. I've gotten to see him at every stage of his career. So that's really exciting. I am really excited about, you know, the potential lineup of him, Josh Hart, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, and Lonzo Ball potentially, you know, taking a leap and becoming almost like a death lineup of sorts, with LeBron playing more of the five and kicking it out to, you know, those shooters on the wing. So I think that's a potential exciting lineup. But on the other,
hope for Ball in that lineup, and that would be my most exciting Laker lineup. But continue.
But on the other hand, if it all just falls apart, we talked about last week, you know, they have the reality show lineup of LeBron, JaVale, Michael Beasley, Rondo, KCP. You know, they have of course, Lance Stevenson. So they have so many players that could be just incredibly hilarious to watch LeBron just roll his eyes at and give passive aggressive stares to. So I just can't wait for, it's either going to be incredibly high-level basketball under Luke Walton's offense and LeBron's tutelage to these younger players, or it's just going to be high comedy with LeBron responding to these just knuckleheads that the Lakers have decided to sign. So
I totally agree. I mean, like, up or down, it's hard to imagine the Lakers being uninteresting to watch this year.
How much did the Pacers sign Tyreek Evans for? Because I'm like, why didn't the Lakers sign someone like that? Like that.
There were so many guys signed on the cheap who would have been great fits around LeBron this year that the Lakers completely ignored and instead paid more money to like really terrible fits.
Yeah, so we'll talk about the Lakers a lot more, but yeah, let's move on now.
One thing I'll have to say about the Lakers, though, before we move on, is just out of the teams on this, we only have one other team I think that's more likely to not make the playoffs. And I do think that the outcome for the Lakers are not that interesting to watch is kind of They've been on national TV a ton, so everyone's seen him. Everyone knows all the goofy and fun storylines. And they're like, you know, 7, 8, 10 games out of the playoff race late in the season. LeBron's kind of mailing it in, sitting out a lot of games. I think you could see an outcome like that. But I think like 99% chance the Lakers are super watchable, good or bad.
Yeah, and I don't know. When they first signed LeBron and did all these goofy signings, I think I was with you, and I'm not sure if you're still here, that they wouldn't make the playoffs, but I'm just like, I'm not going to bet against LeBron to miss the playoffs. And I think these younger guys are really going to improve. And I think Josh Hart and Brandon Ingram are just going to be absolute studs for them. And you can't count them out to, you know, making something happen midseason via trade. So especially now that they were able to offload the Lou Alding contract. So we'll see.
But we'll see. We'll get to our playoff projections on a future pod. I haven't thought it through.
All right, so our next team we both agreed on, 13-year-old me would be so disappointed in this pick because I once asked my mom if I could customize my own Duck Ferk shirt and wear it to a Dallas Mavericks and Spurs playoff game. But the Dallas Mavericks are my next team and your next team on the league pass ranking. So why were you excited about them?
Mainly just Luka. I think I've heard so much about him. He kind of unites. The great thing about Luka is that he unites the eye test game watching NBA Twitter and the analytics data NBA Twitter in complete certainty that he's like the best prospect in the last 10 years or whatever. And I've only, you know, seen some clips and seen a little bit of stats and maybe watched like half of one game here or there. So I feel like I need to see what all this hype is about, because the people that I trust the most in terms of their basketball opinions all are like really on the Luka train.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's mainly about that. And, you know, he'll have fun guys around him. Unlike Trey, Luka's coming into a situation where he has some support and should be put in a position to thrive and succeed from his rookie year rather than having to wait a few years. Because, you know, DeAndre, they got Harrison Barnes. I thought Dennis Smith Jr. was pretty overrated as a rookie. He's just like an inefficient volume shooter with questionable defense. But he's still like a talented basketball player to put out there next to Luka.
Yeah.
You know, Wes Matthews, I guess Dirk is still in the NBA, I'm told. No offense. Like, I love Dirk, but he's pretty old. So, yeah, I mean, Luka plus like a supporting cast such that they won't obviously be terrible sounds like a ton of fun for me.
Yeah, I wonder what their best roster is. Let me look it up. I mean, I think it's Luka, DeAndre, Harrison Barnes.
I'd probably say small with Barnes at the four and Wes Matthews and one of the point guards.
Yeah, JJ. I guess he's still around.
Definitely think JJ is currently better than Dennis Smith Jr., but obviously they need Smith to develop. So
yeah. So, you know, more on the narrative, two things on the narrative side. They make a fun league pass team because, you know, on any given night, there's going to be a lot of highlights, like you said, eye test wise with Luka. And Dennis Smith probably will have a night where, you know, they're down 13 with 4 minutes left and he just decides to go nuclear and bring him back on the road against, you know, Charlotte or something. And
did
so
that really happened last year?
No, but I just feel like
not flashing like that last year, but sorry, go ahead.
But I just think
he shot 39% for the, I thought he was inefficient. He shot 39% for the field for full season.
Yeah.
69% from the free throw. That's ghastly.
But I also just think he's like the type of guy, like when late in games, Rick Carlisle will 100%, you know, it'll be a lineup of him and Jalen Brunson and kind of a bunch of other, yeah, they're young guys in, and I just think he has potential to be a serious heat check guy. And just I think it's cool that, you know, Dirk Nowitzki is the greatest foreign player to ever play in the NBA. And it's just a cool way to bridge the gap into the next era of Mavericks basketball. The fact that this will probably be, I'm guessing, Dirk's last season, and he'll get to share that with Luka. So I just think that'll be cool.
Totally. That's another bonus, like the mixing of old and young. Like so many of these teams, they either have like a bunch of veterans because they're going for it and trying to win titles, or they have like a bunch of young players because they're rebuilding. But these guys, they have like Smith and Luka, but they also have like Dirk and Barnes and DeAndre and these older, you know, mid-career guys. So that's a lot of fun. I agree.
One of my pet peeves in the NBA is when people think that Harrison Barnes is not good. That is just completely ridiculous. Harrison Barnes isn't a top 25 player in the NBA, but Harrison Barnes is literally a good NBA player who is a really solid starter. And he's on a max contract, but when he signed that max contract was when everybody was signing idiotic players like Pau Gasol and Ryan Anderson to huge contracts. I'd much rather have Harrison Barnes at whatever he's making, $19 million a year, than a lot of the other contracts that were signed in that era. I mean, I think the Heat would much rather have Harrison Barnes on a max contract than having Tyler Johnson on a four-year, $60 million deal or whatever he was signed to. So,
I guess. Wait, hold on, that mic came out. Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty low on Harrison Barnes, I would say. I just quickly Googled the ESPN's real plus minus, which is my first stat to go to when I don't have an opinion, is really low on Harrison Barnes, so maybe lower than I thought I was. I mean, I guess this is what you can say about Harrison Barnes. He's definitely providing some value out there at all times because he's not bad at anything. Like, he can guard a bunch of positions. He plays hard. He's a good teammate. He doesn't have like horrible shot selection. He can shoot a bit from the outside. So it's not like you can leave him alone. Like, Harrison Barnes is kind of the perfect, like, not going to hurt you player, but I sort of disagree. I think his contract's pretty hideous.
But I just always think it's ridiculous that, one, he's essentially being asked to be the number one scorer on the Mavericks, or the past couple of years he was, and that's not his game. And he was great on the Warriors in his role, and people always blame the loss to the Cavs essentially on Harrison Barnes not making open shots, where in Game 7, Klay and Curry both missed open shots. And, hey, that series never comes down to Harrison Barnes if Draymond Green doesn't punch LeBron James in the balls. Like, so
I mean, I sort of agree that Draymond is the number one culprit, but Harrison Barnes was unplayably awful.
But I mean, it's also Steve Kerr was
the worst player on the court pretty much the entire series.
I mean, Festus Ezeli was completely terrible, and yet Steve Kerr had him in on the court guarding LeBron with like 6 minutes left in Game 7 of those finals.
I agree, there are other guys who deserve more blame.
So, all right, next team. I actually don't really know why I put this this team, other than I think Anthony Davis. Actually, my next two teams are teams where I think their guys could potentially be the best player in the league this year. So that's why I put the Pelicans. I think it'll be really interesting to see how much better Anthony Davis can get. They did lose Rondo. Obviously, they lost Boogie Cousins, who really wasn't a part of when their team, I think, started to be special towards the end of last year. But, you know, they took the Warriors to 6 games, correct, in the second round. So I think they're a team that's getting better. You know, signed Julius Randle, who will maybe have a second opportunity to blossom in New Orleans. But why'd you put the Pelicans on your list? I was actually kind of surprised that you put them.
By the way, I lost like a minute of my recording because my mic got unplugged, but I'm back to recording now. I love the guys on the Pelicans, and so for me, this is like really, I'm biased towards the Pelicans. Anthony Davis is from Chicago. I love watching him play. He's kind of the one hope for the future Bulls, I think, that if he like really wants to play for his hometown team, that's kind of the one way I could see the Bulls really contending in the next few years. Drew Holiday, I'm a big fan of, you know, he does those Lean In Together commercials about supporting your spouse along with some other NBA players, but he's kind of lived it more than anyone else when he took a half season off to take care of his wife, U.S. national women's soccer player, Lauren Holiday, when she had a brain tumor and was pregnant with their child. She turned out okay, and that was a great story. Etuan Moore, former Bull, kind of an underrated, tough defender type I really like. Niko Mirotic, a former Bull who I have always admired from the beginning of his career, and according to my read of the lineup data, is like a criminally underrated NBA player. So I think I might be forgetting some guys, but yeah, I just really like the dudes on their team. They got rid of Rondo, who I think is kind of annoying. Wait, they got rid of Rondo, right?
Yeah,
they
did. Lakers.
Which, oh yeah, of course. Which will put Drew Holiday even more front and center. And I just, what we saw to Drew Holiday in the playoffs last year gives me some kind of spark of a thought that he might be ready to pull a Victor Oladipo. He's a few years older than Oladipo. He's 28 now, whereas Oladipo last year when he broke out was only 25. But Drew Holiday played at like a real star level in those playoffs. Like he thoroughly outplayed Damian Lillard head to head in that Blazers sweep. And then, you know, he's probably like the third best guy on the court during that Warriors series when Steph was still kind of hobbled. And so like the star potential for Holiday, who I love, is a big part of this. And then also, yeah, let's see how Julius Randle, I think he's a much better fit as kind of a bench, you know, bowling ball big with some athleticism than Cousins was in that starting lineup. As we saw, they sort of were better. Cousins got hurt.
The interesting thing about the Pelicans, I think even, you know, more so than anyone else on our list, they have like the biggest night to night variance where they could easily, I think, you know, have games where they beat Golden State by 20, like you saw in the playoffs. And like they could absolutely dominate teams. And Anthony Davis could just, you know, fully exert his dominance. But I think you've made this point before, they can really struggle against teams who have dominant wings like Kawhi. So there also will probably be nights where they might go to Toronto and lose by 30. And so I think that might be kind of interesting just from they could have a little bit of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde team. And I think that the night to night variance will be pretty high with them to where they could be a machine some nights and like just pretty like, I don't know that they were just like very blunt force in nights where they were good last year, where they would just, they would pound people sometimes. Like they killed the Warriors.
Like the Blazers in the playoffs.
Yeah. And they killed the Warriors in one of those playoff games. But then other nights it's like, they just like wouldn't show up.
The wing thing it's very true. I mean, we talked about this in the playoffs. Like the Blazers are such a perfect matchup for them because they had excellent small perimeter defenders, and Holiday, who's just a spectacular defender, and Etuan, who's a really good defender, and Rondo, who shows flashes, particularly in the playoffs. Of course, the Blazers had two small guards, Lillard and McCollum, who are their two main guys. But then wing defense, it's like Solomon Hill and Holiday guarding guys who are taller than him. Which he does incredibly well, but still, there's only one of him, and he also needs to guard the smaller guards. So they really didn't fix that problem. Looks like, looking up and down their roster, it's still like, you know, Darius Miller, Solomon Hill types kind of look like their only major wing options. So that remains a hole, but still a lot to like with the Pelicans. Should we move on?
Yeah, let's do it. All right, next team on our list. I chose it for a similar reason, the Milwaukee Bucks, because I think, you know, the Eastern Conference perennial stalwart in LeBron James, no matter what team he was on, has gone west. So there really could be a chance for someone to assume that mantle. And I think Giannis is the best player in the Eastern Conference now. I think that's I would put him, until I really see, you know, a healthy 30 games from Kawhi, I think he's better than Kawhi. And I think I love Kawhi as a player, but I think at times Giannis even hit, ceilings that Kawhi hasn't hit yet.
I mean, who else is even competitive in the Eastern Conference? Off the top of my head, I think Oladipo is the only other guy I'd even consider.
I mean, I guess if you can really talk yourself into Kyrie.
I'm so not on board with Kyrie in the same breath as these other three.
But, I think Giannis is absolutely the best player in the conference. And, you know, I think there is a roadmap. Obviously, this doesn't really have to do with league pass watchability, but I think there is a roadmap to where the Bucks, I can't see them being the number one seed, but I could see them getting to the finals if the, you know, injuries happen, if maybe Toronto doesn't end up like the team that we think they will be and kind of flame out early, to where it's really just Milwaukee and Boston. And, you know, best
the Bucks are my number one finals dark horse as well.
Yeah. So,
I mean, if you think about it,
how about you go into a little bit about the them under a Coach Bud offense? I love Coach Bud from his days in San Antonio, and those Hawks, early Hawks teams, really fun. But.
Totally. I mean, a quick note on them as a finals dark horse. I think people really underrate what they did in last year's playoffs because of the timing of how it happened. It was like Kyrie and Hayward were out for the playoffs. And so everyone was like, oh, the Celtics are like clearly not a real playoff threat. And then the Bucks took them to 7 very competitive games, almost won that series. And then the Celtics like dispatched the Sixers in 5 and took the Cavs to 7 and were clearly a legitimate playoff team, even without those two stars that the Bucks almost beat. You know, they're getting those two stars back, but the Bucks, as we're about to talk about, made a ton of changes kind of on the periphery of their roster and with their coach. And also Giannis was 22 last season, so there's a lot of upside for the Bucks. In that sense. But yeah, I think Budenholzer changes everything for the Bucks, really. I think I don't think Jason Kidd really knew what the heck he was doing. I don't really know the details of it because I haven't watched them enough on League Pass, but it seemed like a lot of people on NBA Twitter and kind of the scout types really had problems with Jason Kidd. And Budenholzer, you know, led that Hawks team without any real superstar on the team. Probably their best player was like Al Horford to a 60-win season. And now he's got, like you were talking about, a true superstar in Giannis. But then the key thing here is I just love the way they've surrounded their roster with perimeter defense and switchability that can guard multiple positions and three-point shooting all the way up and down.
Yeah, I wanted to ask if you're...
They can guard Giannis one-on-one. And so if he's surrounded with shooters, it's a James Harden-type pick-your-poison situation.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I wanted to ask, so it's like if you're watching basketball in December and you're flipping through the League Pass channels and the Bucks are on, what lineup gets you most excited that you're like, okay, I'm going to watch the Bucks for the next 25 minutes because I'm into this lineup? Obviously, Giannis and who, Chris Middleton, who are the
Definitely
other three?
Giannis. I would say why don't we just go Giannis at center with 4 shooters? So let's go Giannis, Middleton, Dante DiVincenzo, who, unfortunate tweets aside, that were his homophobic tweets that he apologized for, was one of my favorite players in the draft before I learned about that. But I think it's just like a really hard-nosed, tenacious defender and a terrific three-point shooter. He's a rookie out of Villanova, obviously. He's the most outstanding player of the Final Four, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
and then
he was.
I really like Pat Connaughton, kind of an under-the-radar signing that they made, another 6'5 shooter, former Blazer out of Notre Dame. And then let's go with, I guess I can pick between former Bull Tony Snell or victim of police brutality, Sterling Brown, for my 5th player. Or I guess Brogdon. God, there's so many players on this roster I love. So, I mean, Giannis and Middleton are the star-caliber talents on the wing.
Okay, that, I mean, you going through that, I mean, they definitely are going to struggle with shooting. Kind of, there's going to be, I think.
No, they've shooters everywhere.
But I think at all times, I mean, they might have a 5th guy on the court that it's like, we don't have to guard this guy.
I disagree. I'm looking up and down their roster, and I think the most important change they made this whole offseason that we haven't mentioned yet is signing Brooke Lopez to be their starting center, who last year shot a very high volume of threes. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he shot like 35-ish% on like a bunch of attempts per 36 minutes. He put up 4.4 threes in 23 minutes per game. So that's something like 6 attempts per 36 minutes on almost 35% shooting. So I think you have Brooke Lopez, because previously they've always had a non-shooting center like John Henson getting most of the minutes at center. So if you put a three-point shooting big like Brooke Lopez out there with Giannis, and then basically every other perimeter player on their team can shoot. I mean, Middleton, DiVincenzo, Brogdon, Brown, Snell, Connaughton. I guess Eric Bledsoe is the worst three-point shooter on their roster, who's likely to get minutes. Henson's still on the team. So if Henson plays more than I'm expecting him to play, then I can see your point. But otherwise, I think they have an absurd amount of shooting, and I trust Budenholzer to deploy it well.
I do think guys like Sterling Brown, Malcolm Brogdon, even Eric Bledsoe will get better. But I guess like that, I think like there are people, I haven't watched Sterling Brown play very often, but I feel like his minutes, I mean, he played 14.4 minutes a game last year and shot 40%. That's just somebody that I want to see, you know, play more minutes before I'm actually like, okay, I'm scared of that guy being the fifth person in a Bucks lineup.
Okay, but he's like the 10th man in there. I mean, if you go through their starting lineup, it's going to be like Bledsoe, Snell, maybe. Like Bledsoe, Snell, Middleton, Giannis, and a center.
I mean,
Lopez,
it will be really interesting to see if Thon Maker survives the regime change in a Budenholzer. I mean, obviously he'll still be on the team, but like he was starting playoff games for them last year.
That's a good point. I mean, who gets the bench minutes, I think, will be fascinating to see, because we've named way more than 10 guys, and you can't really play more than 10 guys consistently in the NBA. So I feel like, but that's kind of what makes me confident in them too. I feel like out of this group of like backup wings, for instance, Brown, Connaughton, DiVincenzo, Snell, probably some others who I'm forgetting, they don't need them all to be good. They need like one or two of those guys to like come through at like a bench player 15 minutes a game level. And I feel like there's enough upside. I mean, Connaughton, I feel like, has already proven himself out of that group.
And
I really like Pat Connaughton. His defense is underrated, in my opinion.
He's on his second stint with the Bucks. It feels like this guy has like literally been around forever. He's only been in the league 10 years. But
wait,
I mean,
10 years? He's 25.
No, Ilyasova. Sorry.
Ilyasova. I didn't even mention. Oh, I forgot about Ilyasova.
And I mean, you know,
he can shoot.
Yeah, he's a career 36% 3-point shooter. I mean, he really, him and Bellinelli really changed the Sixers last year. So he'll be interesting. But yeah, let's move on.
Bucks, they're going to be so fun this year. All right, let's move on.
Probably no surprise for our last team if people have been or listened to our podcast last week. But the Toronto Raptors, we touched on it last week. We just really think that their, you know, lineup of potential like perimeter defense death will be amazing to watch. Kawhi, Danny Green, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, and who's my fifth one? Why am I forgetting somebody?
Kyle Lowry?
Kyle Lowry, sorry. Yeah, forgot the point guard. So that will be an amazing lineup. And then, you know, have some fun guys on the bench. Obviously, new coach. And, I mean, I could see a scenario happening where maybe the Celtics don't gel as well as we think that they're going to, where the Raptors really run away with the Eastern Conference if Kawhi is healthy. Like I could see them, you know, I could see a world where they win around 50 games or high 40s if Kawhi for some reason is just pouty and disengaged. I know.
In which case they could be like super unwatchable.
Yeah, and
like,
I know
this roster with a pouty, disengaged, or injured Kawhi would be like actually not that fun.
Yeah.
It's just missing something at the top.
Yeah, exactly. But I think an engaged Kawhi with, you know, a healthy rest of the team that will buy into Kawhi and not almost be bitter, like, well, what the hell are you doing here? Like, if you just want to leave and, like, actually wants to really go for this thing. I mean, I think they could be, like, a mid-60 win team. Like,
absolutely.
So
they could win a title this year. If it comes together, they could beat a full strength Warriors team in the finals. That's how good their depth and star power at the top is. Because, I mean, Kyle Lowry, I've said this a million times, is the perfect number two player on an NBA team, I think, in a lot of ways, with his off ball prowess, shooting, his defense, his versatility, his unselfishness. I'm a big Kyle Lowry fan, and he's never gotten to be the second best player because DeRozan was never a true.
I mean, what's crazy is that defensive lineup we just threw out, like that didn't even include Serge Ibaka, who I know is like lost, you know, a step and is not who he used to be. You know, border or was he? He did win Defensive Player of the Year 1 year, didn't he?
I don't think he ever did.
Oh, he was always in the top five, and like, you know, really changed playoff series with OKC several times, but like that didn't even mention him, and he was having to shoot so much the last couple years. I think he can knock down threes. And if Ibaka is just able to sort of resume that role in OKC, you know, and with Valanciunas, I mean, they're going to have some scary, like, bench lineups, like with or guys that can just score at a high clip, from Fred VanVleet to Valanciunas to Norman Powell. And they, you know, he's not somebody I'd want to be a starter or somebody that I would rely on. But like, their 10th man is going to be Greg Monroe. And with all these other good defenders, it's like, to add a guy who can score in the post and can get you like 6 or 7 minutes where he's going to score 6 or 8 points. I mean, that's pretty valuable. So, I mean, I really like the Raptors. I can't believe I'm this excited about a team where my favorite player stabbed my favorite team in the back. But yeah, I'm like all in on the Raptors. Legitimately, I could see a universe in which I watch more of the Raptors this year than I do the Spurs. So
here's a cool stat. There are only four players in the NBA who grade out as an A rating by Basketball Index, which uses tracking data to grade guys' particular skills. There's only four point guards in the NBA who grade out as A's for perimeter shooting and perimeter defense, and they're Chris Paul, Tyreek Evans, Kyle Lowry, and Fred VanVleet. VanVleet consistently is like a borderline elite player in a lot of the advanced stats. I think he really should be the sixth man of the year in terms of overall impact defensively and offensively, both in terms of creating for his teammates and scoring himself. And he doesn't even start for them. He's going to play like 20 minutes a game. And DeLon Wright is like an elite backup point guard too, and he's their third best point guard.
Yeah.
So that bench lineup of VanVleet, I mean, this is the same as last year basically, but that bench lineup of VanVleet, Wright, CJ Miles, and his incredible off-balance, off-ball moving and shooting, and Siakam, who we've talked about. There's so much depth, and now they have the true star power at the top. And it pains me so much to sound like I'm throwing shade at DeMar DeRozan right here, because I really believe that his speaking up about mental health and his struggles with it and his fighting through it is like one of the best sports stories probably the last decade, not just the last year. And DeMar DeRozan's one of my favorite dudes in the NBA as a result, but like, he just was not a superstar, and he was miscast as the number one option on an elite team. And now they have like a true superstar
to replace
him. And Danny Green too, like the brand new excellent role player, who's super underrated in his own right with his defense and shooting.
Yeah, and what people forget, Kawhi's last healthy year on San Antonio, I mean, Danny Green was second team all defense, I believe, and really he took the bulk of the defensive assignments away from Kawhi that year. I mean, I remember him shutting down Paul George down the stretch and really allowed Kawhi to accelerate and take that leap into the next level scorer, where he wasn't just averaging 16 to 20 points a game. But, you know, Kawhi for a while, I think, was about to average more points in a season than Tim Duncan ever averaged. I think for, you know, a good portion of the season, I think maybe until the quad tendinopathy started to come back. Now that I think of it, I mean, he was averaging 26, 27 a game. I think he eventually came down about 25. And Danny Green took a huge bulk of the defensive assignment. Danny Green has struggled with injuries last year and off and on throughout his career. But yeah, I mean, and I'm just looking at their bench right now. You know, they just have so many scorers, like from Greg Monroe to CJ Miles, Norm Powell on their deep bench. And, you know, those guys aren't people who are necessarily, you know,
love Powell. I forgot about Powell. He's
yeah.
A good player too. And he like didn't even get in the rotation in the playoffs much last year.
Yeah. So they're not guys who are necessarily going to win you a playoff series, at least based on what we know of them right now. But they're somebody who they're going to be really fun to watch when they're playing more minutes in the regular season. So yeah, I think
here's the bottom line on the Raptors. The Warriors obviously are an all-time great team, and the Celtics are growing into a potentially all-time great team. If you think about the stars they already have in Kyrie, Hayward, and Horford, and then adding Tatum, who's looking like a true rising superstar to that mix. And there's just not a lot of teams in the history of the NBA who can match up with the type of perimeter talent and ball movement and shooting and ball handling and passing that the Warriors and Celtics have. And the Raptors are sort of doing it. Like, they're sort of putting together a roster that you could see, you know, Lowry on Kyrie or Curry, Danny Green on Hayward or Clay, you know, Kawhi on Kevin Durant or Jason Tatum, Pascal Siakam or Ibaka on Horford or Draymond Green. Like, you're talking about the Celtics and Warriors have rosters that are basically unguardable in terms of quantity and quality and versatility of talent. And the Raptors are putting together like a 10-man rotation, really, where basically all the guys can credibly guard one of the stars on, with the exception of maybe Valanciunas, all the guys can like credibly guard one of the star players on the Celtics and Warriors. So,
but they have no answer for LaMarcus Aldridge or DeJounte Murray for the NBA.
That's right. That's right. They can put up a defense that will compete with Steph and KD, but Murray Aldridge combo is going to be unstoppable compared to Steph and KD.
All right, let's breeze through our unwatchable rankings. I think I do have a point on DeMar DeRozan and mental health, and how I think, like, kind of him maybe leaving the environment of Toronto, it's like, and going to the Spurs, I think their culture will, I don't know, I really could see him taking that extra leap because of the culture that the Spurs have created. And it'll just be a cool story with him being so open with that, going to a organization that cares so much about their players and their well-being. But I kind of want to make that point in more in depth on a podcast when we talk about this issue with Zach. But yeah, let's do our unwatchable rankings. I'm going to breeze through mine really quick because mine are just like quick little snippets. But Charlotte, because I will be sad watching Tony Parker in another jersey. The Washington Wizards, because good Lord, like, they should be better than they are, but they just continually run the same depressing team back every year. And now they've added the Ebola virus, Dwight Howard, the Dwight Ebola virus to this team. So
but I agree, Dwight is unwatchable.
It's going to be pretty.
I don't think they should be better than they are. I think people think that, but I think when you're led by a point guard who insists on shooting a ton of mid-range jumpers and is just not a good shooter, then you're like pretty guaranteed to be bad.
Yeah.
Or like Joker. You're like, there's no talent you can put around John Wall that's going to make them elite if he continues to have the shot selection that he has.
Yeah. I would like to see, I think Brad Beal would be a great Spur, but we can talk about that another time. And then the Cavs, because that's just going to be like an all-time depressing team, LeBron leaving.
Oh, I think the Cavs could be really fun to watch.
Really? I just think
if the right is come together. I mean, adding Nwaba was really, I love watching Nwaba.
I guess I'm just assuming that everything will go wrong. Like, Kevin Love will not be healthy and it's just going to be depressing and sad.
Fair enough. I'm just saying, I think people forget how fun an offense centered around Kevin Love can be.
Yeah.
So if Sexton lives up to, I don't think Sexton's good, but if Sexton lives up to his hype, then I can see the Cavs.
And then my last team that I really have no interest in watching, and I know that they're going to be great and they play a style of basketball that I like, but individually with the ball in their hands, I don't really like watching any of the Celtics players other than Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier. I just don't think that their individual players are very fun to watch.
You don't like watching Kyrie's handles?
I mean, I guess I just like sort of think that it gets redundant. I think like in snippets or in highlights, I like watching it, but I don't know. I just don't really like watching full Celtics games or like sitting down. I guess this is more just from like a league. Like, I'll obviously watch big Celtics games that are nationally televised, but I'm just not really excited about their night to night games where we're going to see a lot of Jason Tatum turnaround jumpers. So I don't know.
All right, I'll do mine. I'm going to start with the Southeastern United States. I think the Magic are going to be gross to watch. Just too many 6'10" guys miscast as wing players when they really should be small ball fours and fives. Isaac Gordon and Bamba should all be playing the five, in my opinion, in the modern NBA, or at least like more of their minutes at the five than the four. Really no perimeter talent. I'm not that interested in watching Bamba because I feel like even the best case projections for Bamba have him being like unplayably bad for a year or two while he figures out the NBA and the speed of the game. Hornets, I just feel like the running it back with the same team that we know is not good for years, I think is, you and I are both hitting on that as like criteria for unwatchability. And I love Kemba Walker and I would love to see Kemba Walker on a different team or a different Hornets team even, but I'm just sick. I've nothing interesting, no intriguing young players or anything. I'm very excited. Wait, who the Hornets draft? Shai, right? Shai Gilgeous Alexander?
Yeah. Or they, yeah. Yep.
Or no, did the Clippers draft him? Okay, whatever. Anyway, not really that interested in watching the Hornets. And then I'm really bored of the Heat. Like, in some sense, they could be fun because they pass it around, play defense. But, like, Whiteside's kind of a crybaby, and that's annoying. And then it's just kind of like the same shtick of Eric Spoelstra getting too much out of a whole bunch of role players without really a star. And then the Dwayne Wade farewell tour is just going to be nauseating for me because I think he's really annoying. And I'm not excited about watching Dwayne Wade jack up a bunch of Kobe-like bad jumpers.
Yeah.
For, you know, 7-9 seed.
Yeah, so they'll have a couple. They'll be a team, in my opinion, that will have some fun games, like where Dion Waiters does decide to go nuclear.
Oh, I cannot watch Dion Waiters.
But then, and then they do have some players who I like as individuals. I really like Josh Richardson. James Johnson is just like a classic NBA tough guy who I think the league lacks in the modern NBA, who's just like
totally fun. I love those guys.
Fun to watch. And then Justice Winslow, you know, is interesting. Adebayo,
Bam's fun to watch.
Yeah. Adebayo occasionally, you know, throw up a nice highlight. But yeah, I do agree that with Dion Waiters and Goran Dragic and Whiteside and Dwayne Wade running the show, I mean, it's just going to be pretty depressing. And yeah, I can't believe like this is still a Spoelstra and Riley led team that kind of like this has been their plan. I don't know. It's strange. So
I have two more teams on my unwatchability rankings. The Clippers, just because they're not young and they're also not trying to compete, or like I don't think they seriously are trying to compete. So I just have really no interest in watching the Clippers. And then the Blazers, it was just kind of a weird one because I will, in practice, watch the Blazers. They're going to be competing for playoff spots, and like,
I'm tired of them. Yeah,
on this rankings, but like, they've run back the same roster for a bunch of years in a row, and like last year was kind of the year where you felt like, oh, something might be clicking. Like they had that big 12-game winning streak in the spring, and they got it barely by one game over the 8 seed, snagged the 3 seed.
Yep.
And people were like, kind of give them a little too much credit for the 3 seed, because really they were just the healthiest out of those 6 teams.
Yep.
Like, you know, Millsap was injured, Gobert was injured, Jimmy Butler was injured. Everyone basically had injuries, and that, I guess the Thunder didn't have injuries. But anyway, and then they got swept out of the playoffs by the Pelicans. And so now it's like, we know this doesn't work. You don't have like young guys coming down the pipeline who are going to change what your roster looks like, and you're just kind of like perpetually capped as like a first round exit kind of team.
Yeah, no, I'm really tired of them. I wish they would have traded either Lillard or McCollum and changed up for a wing and changed up their team, just because. And I like the Blazers franchise for whatever reason. Like, I think it's just because of what our podcast is named after, Breaks of the Game, one of my favorite books. I've just kind of always had an affinity for the Blazers. So it's like, I will naturally root for them just as a franchise. I like Dame. I liked LaMarcus Aldridge when he was with Portland. But yeah, I just am tired of the shtick of running it back. Hey, I do want to ask you something. We have not talked about the Sixers at all. So I was just like, what is your feel about?
We should get to that on like one of the playoff preview pods. I feel like it's not a 30-second topic.
Okay, because I was trying to talk myself into being excited about them and adding them to my five teams, and I just couldn't. And I couldn't put my finger on that. So maybe let's formulate that a little bit more and talk about that next week.
I can put my finger on why I find the Sixers not super watchable, despite how much exciting young talent they have.
All right. We'll get into that next week. We'll let Zach Crippen, host, owner of the Third String Podcast and Vernacular Podcast Network, to stew over that a little bit as a teaser going into next week. So you got any, you got anything before we sign off?
Nope. Cubs just won.
Nice. Congrats.
Sports.
Great. Awesome, man. Well, next week we'll start getting into a little bit more, NBA previews. So yeah, let us know what you thought of our rankings. Hit us up at Takes of the Game. Remember to tell your friends that our podcast is now on the Third String Podcast feed. So all of the Third String Podcasts, football, baseball, Takes of the Game, are all consolidated into that one feed. So if you're like, hey, where have Eshawn and Taylor been? You're on the wrong feed. So, give us a review.
Also, they probably didn't get that message. So
yeah, maybe so. You're right. So follow us at Takes of the Game. You can find me at The T Young on Twitter. What's your new Twitter handle? Some ode to Luol Deng.
Jimmy and Lou Forever is what the Twitter account is called.
Nice. All right. I love it. Did you ever see the guy who got the double on both arms Charlie Villanueva tattoos?
We should put this. That's probably like Bill Simmons. Is, these are my readers. Like the sign that we should sign the podcast off.
Well, I was just gonna say I could see you getting matching like Luol Deng tattoos on both arms. But yeah, so
I would probably express my love differently. Twitter account is my version of that.
Nice. Sure. All right, man. Well, you have a good one. I'll talk to you next week.